pygmies and giants, sin of the ancients. Everybody loves stories. The Kotzker once said, he's very famous for his pithy wit, he once said, Jeder einer hat lieb am Meister, oder man darf wissen, wie er soll zu hören am Meister. Everybody enjoys the story, but one needs to develop a sensitivity to know exactly how to listen, how to understand what story is coming to tell you there. My kids, and I'm sure a lot of other kids as well, enjoy being put to sleep with stories. Kotzker said, no, the story should have the potency, should have the power to awaken us. With that in mind, Klal Yisrael, treasured, the most beloved of all stories and narrative, is that of the Torah and Nach, which holds a very special place in our hearts and in our national conscience. However, Chas v'Shalom, one should not see the Torah as being merely a history book. It's not just a legal text. Chas v'Shalom, as it says in Sefer Bereishis, Zeh Sefer Toldos Ha'Adam. The greatest story ever told deals with the development of mankind, starting obviously from Adam Harishon, from first man, recording the lives of the Ovis and the Emois, fathers and mothers, and eventually the birth and journey of Klal Yisrael as a journey towards Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, the stories and the Ishei HaTorah, the biblical personalities, are an integral chelek of Torah. And if that's the case, they are no less worthy of our analysis than being mazbir, the crossing in the various nekudos of a mitzvah. Torah hi ulamada ani tzorech. In Sefer Yisrael, the Bumagon says something astounding. He says that every detail of history, past, present, and future, and every individual's life in all of its detail, is found within the Torah. As Misha says, hafesh bach to kulabah. Looking and delve into the Torah, because everything is within that. Actually, if you think about it, it's quite obvious, really, because Torah comes from the Lashon of Horah. Horah is instructions. Therefore, the Torah is our internal instructions and our guidance, which is obviously pertinent and relevant to every single generation. But that presents us with a dilemma, a formidable dilemma. Because how exactly are we to relate to the Ovos and to the Ishei HaTanach in general? Of course, the Havdol Elef Havdolos, every single other culture also has its range of heroes and villains. And from a Yiddish perspective, we need to look in the Torah and recognize that the personalities of the Torah, both Bein Latov, Bein Nara, also provide us with models of what we should be and what we shouldn't. Nevertheless, how do we relate to the Ovos? How do we relate, and specifically, how do we understand and grapple with when Tzadikim appear to have committed a certain, being involved in a certain chait? And a classic example which I want to use as a springboard to discuss this, as found in this week's Sedra, to deal with Chatos Rishonim, is the sin of the ancients, is within our Parsha. In our Parsha, towards the end, it mentions Vayelech Ruvain, Vayishkad et Bilha. Right? Ruvain went, Ruvain, the son of Yaakov, he went and he lay with Bilha, Pilegesh of it, his father's concubine, Vayishma Yisrael, Yisrael heard about this. And then there's a break in the pasuk. Vayu ben Yaakov, Shemasa. Then but the sons of Yaakov remained 12. Sounds simple enough. The Torah tells us exactly what Reuben did. That's the Gemara in the Sugya of Bamer Bahema, Gemara in Shabbos stuff. Nunhei on the base says Omer Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni, Omer Bionason. Kolo Omer Reuben Chata. If somebody thinks that Reuben committed a sin, he is simply mistaken. Hold on 1 second. We go to the Torah tells us what Reuben did. And now the Gemara comes to tell us, no, that wasn't considered a chait. So hold on. If his chait wasn't a chait, if his sin wasn't a sin, well, then why does the Torah describe it as such? And what's the phrasing of the Gemara? Eino elo Torah. Kala oime Reuben chata eino elo Torah. Very strange expression. In order to understand this, There was a speech that Rav Aaron Kotler, that the Bracha gave to Mechanchin Masura and Torah Masura Convention in America, where he advised educators exactly how they should relate and how they should involve teaching over to children how to grapple with this issue. And he was quite emphatic in mentioning how, chas v'shalom, a person shouldn't perceive the Ishiyat Torah as being mythological figures detached from reality. One chas v'shalom cannot perceive them as being legends in the same way that l'hafdil, a person wouldn't consider the Torah as being just another work of literature. I can just read you out a couple of lines. Sorach l'ilmoid l'amed, tashra b'mati ha'ovos. We need to learn and teach how to understand the actions of our forefathers, of our predecessors. One should not approach with from a secular market in the marketplace. A person should approach it with understanding, contemplation of what exactly it involves. And a person should realize, even once you've been eyeing into all of this, Hein ketupa min hayam neged atmias ha'inyan k'mo shehein. However much a person is able to perceive, that is just a drop in the ocean. So on the contrary, it's imperative to grasp an untarnished Torah Hashkofa. We must develop an acute sensitivity to these spiritual giants. Chas v'shalom, they are not your typical average Joe Blogs on the streets with all of his petty hang-ups. The great danger of approaching the biblical personalities in this way was brought home to me in my formative teenage years, many years ago, when my secular non-Jewish English literature teacher remarked, you know, I really identify with King David. She was obviously referring to the story of David and Bathsheba, and obviously she had taken a very literal understanding of that episode in Nach. You know, I really identify with him. He was so human. She was most disappointed when I tried to explain to her that the Gemara actually says you're reading the story completely different, completely wrong. Therefore, we cannot see or equate our failings, chas v'shalom, with theirs. On the contrary, the Gemara in Bomet says, kol ha'poisel b'mume poisel. So if a person projects their own failings onto others, so therefore if a person is jealous, he perceives someone else as being jealous. And chas v'shalom for a person to read the story of Yosef and his brothers as just being an example of sibling rivalry. Chas v'shalom for a person to say that Korach and Moshe is a political coup, exactly who's going to take control of the party, and things like that. It is Torah, it's an integral chelik of Torah, and therefore it behoves us to understand what lies within that and what lessons we can glean from this. I remember going to invited to a house for Shabbos, and one of the kids brought their pictures that they had actually coloured in class. And obviously the artist must have been a very chassidish background, because there was a picture of the Ovis, and the Ovis mamish looked like chassidish rebbes. Yeah, mamish with a bekish, right? I don't know if there was a proper gartel or not, but they mamish looked like as if they were chassidish rebbes. Which is all very, very sweet as well. But I was reminded of a discussion in my class many moons ago, where in my class there was a Sfardi, there was a Yekka, and there was a Litvak, and they were all grappling with what type of Jew Moshe Rabbeinu and the Ovis were. So while I was at least trying to bring various proofs one way or the other, one of my friends piped up and said, obviously Avraham was a Sfardi, because he came from Orkastin. Orkastin is present day Iraq, Iran area as well, so therefore he definitely was a Sfardi. What we are doing over here is we are projecting our mindsets, our perception of who we think what a Rebbe is or someone else, and what we are doing is we are shifting that away from us and projecting it onto somebody else. The problem with that is as the Medrash and Bereishis Rabbah mentioned, ha'ovos heim ha'merkava. The ovos, we can't be masig, they're like the chariot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not that we're ever going to be masig what that really means. They are spiritual giants that defy our finite minds, and we cannot even begin to fathom their greatness. On the contrary, we are not even equivalent to pygmies. Pygmies are a certain African tribe whose average height was less than 5 foot, around about 1.5 meters in comparison. The way Rav Aaron Kotler puts it is, V'lochein, kishum elamdi parshas b'matir ovois, when you're teaching the Torah portions that deal with the actions of the fathers, tzrichim lehasbir, or the Talmidim, she'ein hamaduba b'anoshim regilim. It is imperative to give over to the pupils that you're not talking about normal, ordinary, mundane people. People, bali, midos, verzoinos, people who have got certain character traits, certain inclinations, and certain wills. Elo medabe ba'anoshim she'ein anachnu yecholim lehasik klal es medrigosom. You're talking about such high, lofty individuals. It is impossible for us to even be matic, to have any idea exactly what their spiritual level is all about. They were mikiyim mikol she'ifa v'rotzen atzami. They were free, they were pure, they had no inner inhibition, no inner desires, except doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted them to do. U'kashem she'en onu k'nei midah l'harich l'malochim, just like we don't have a yardstick by which to measure, you know, how big this malach, how long or his wings, etc. Kach einanu kol efsharet leharich or lehasik es madregas ta'ofes. Similarly, it is impossible for us to understand or to measure the lofty, exalted level of the ofes. Nevertheless, having said that, we still must link ourselves, we must attach ourselves to these giants of our forefathers. Right? We've got the concept of Tzchus Ovos, Nasa Ovos Simla Bonim, Amasura goes all the way back to them. Therefore, Oibazoi, we are carrying their legacy. Torah Tivadonu Moshe, Marosha Kelat Yaakov, it's the Marosha, it's our inheritance. Therefore, the kasha is, how do we relate our lives to theirs? Bearing in mind there is this massive gap. And how do we use the Torah perspective to dealing with this? What must be our approach to derive lessons from the lives, to relate it and incorporate it into our own? What we must do is, we must recognize and appreciate that there is the gap, there is the generation gap, in inverted commas. Once we do that, then we can try and bridge that. If I can share with you a discussion I actually had in the last week at home with my two oldest kids, which I think brings out this point quite beautifully. We were discussing, we looked up in the sky, it was late, it was a Friday night, and we saw that the moon was illuminating the heavens, the skies, and my kids asked me, what's bigger, the sun or the moon? Now, the question's not such a bad question, after all. I mean, I didn't get into the medrash about initially that the sun and the moon being exactly the same size, but because from a man's vantage point on this world, they actually look very, very similar in terms of size. So I explained to them that the distance between the Earth and the Moon is around about 240,000 miles. The distance from the Sun to the Earth is 93 million miles. So to give them some muscle of what this is, so imagine if you're going in a car 60 miles per hour, it would take you just over 176 years to get there. That's obviously, bearing in mind, if you don't get incinerated and flamed by getting too close to the sun as well. Another mastic of the sun is that if you take a million Earths, if the sun was hollow, you could fit a million Earths into it. They were pretty impressed with that, with that explanation. And I also told them that also, if you were to imagine the sun as being a football, right, the Earth would be, if I equivalent, just the size of the head of a pin. But what's happened is, if you're looking at the diameter of the sun you can fit, the sun is 400 times the diameter of the moon, but it's also 400 times as far away. Therefore, from Earth, it appears that they are the exact same size. It's only their physical distance which masks their respective sizes. Of course, the sun is much, much larger. But because the sun is so far away and the moon is so much closer, therefore from our perspective, it looks, we want to try and equate the two. Of course, That is wrong. The sun is greater than Shem Ha'aretz, but obviously the sun is far greater and its potency is felt much greater than the moon. If this is the case with regard to the physical distance and size, kal v'chomer ben b'noishel kal v'chomer to the spiritual distance between us and the stars. The Ishei HaTorah, literally, pardon the pun, light years away from our diminutive level and our perspective. No wonder we fail to detect their magnitudes, because we are so far away. Therefore, their size appears to be equivalent, appears to be so much smaller. Maybe a little bit politically incorrect to say this, but Thomas Jefferson's famous phrase that all men are born equal doesn't really hold up, especially from a Torah perspective, because yes, every single person has a divine spark within them and has the potential to grow, but different people are born with different kishroinus, different assets, different abilities, and therefore there are different standards for different people. You obviously expect a higher standard for somebody who holds a higher position of responsibility, and rightly so. An example of this would be from Parshas Emor, where the Pasuk says, "Obas koyin ki sechel liznoit esavia in chaveres," and therefore, what happens is that we say that unlike the death penalty for a daughter of a koyin is much more severe than that of a normal person. Why? Because the skinsacha that she needs to, she has a certain standard. She has lived, she's lived amongst the priesthood, and therefore that should have had an influence upon her. Another example would be, obviously, if a pilot, if someone driving a bicycle is a little bit tipsy, right, obviously it's terrible, but can you compare that to a pilot who decides to down a bottle of Chivas Regal before his flight? Obviously the responsibility on somebody who's in a much higher position is much greater. Politician who lies. Okay, so that's not a very good example. But similarly, also you expect a higher standard than compared to the normal mundane person on the street. Rav Dessler gives us the call of how to deal with this in his famous essay Chassidus Rishonim in the first chelik of Michtav Eliyahu. He explains, to access the deed or the sin of the individual, you must know the level of the person you're dealing with first, and not vice versa. Only then can you weigh up how this person is reacting based upon his standard, your expectations of this individual. Imagine you've got two people who are running, it's 8:28, and they want to get to start the day of Torah on time, and so therefore they're running down the road to try and get here on time as well. And it's about 100 meters to get there, and one of them does it in 9.78 seconds. The other takes them much longer. Now, can we equate the two? Well, it depends who we're talking about. If one of them happens to be a Safa Powell who holds the record set on the 14th of June 2005 in Athens for completing the 100 meters in 9.77 seconds, then yes, to get here in 9.78 seconds is a failing on his part. Marshaking, if it's somebody, if it's an elderly or middle-aged businessman who doesn't really, is not involved in athletics the whole of his life, therefore for him, obviously you cannot use the same barometer, you cannot use the same yardstick. Why? Because each of them is different. Another example, imagine two people give £100 to a certain tzedakah. The only thing is, one of them is having a hard time making ends meet. Therefore, for him, to give that £100 to tzedakah is a formidable act of chesed. Mashenk, another one of them, is a multimillionaire. For him, it's not going to cause a hole in his pocket at all. So for him, only to give £100 on his level, depending upon him, that's obviously completely inadequate. Therefore, Rav Dessler explains, that is Peshat in the Gemara. It's very, very Midoik in the Lashon. When we said, Kal Ha'omer, Ruben Chata, Eina Ole Toya, what are we saying? You know, why don't you say Reuben by Chata? No, what we're doing is we're saying is that if, do not mistakenly think that Reuben sins on the level of contemporary man. Do not think that Reuben's chait was a chait compared to man, our everyday man standard. Chas v'sholem, his failing was based upon his own benchmark. its own standard. It was based upon the standard set by the Torah, which is the highest level possible, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is particular and medaktik in him, the chut atzara, like a hair's breadth. Therefore, it was Reuven's chait, and the Gemara in Shabbos that talks about the various other things, David's chait and Shlomo's chait, etc., they are considered a chait apropos them, namely based upon their high standards, the high responsibility passed upon them. Therefore, according to them, they may have caused a chait. But for us to say Reuven did a chait, namely to try and equate the two with our failings, chas v'shalom. So the Gemara explains what was Reuven's chait and how do we understand this. So the Gemara says it couldn't have been a chait according to our perception, because the pasuk continues by Hiu b'nei Yaakov shnei masa. It says that the sons of Yaakov were 12, namely Reuven was still zocher to be counted amongst the shiftei kof. But so what was his chait? Melamed shekulim shekulim ka'achas. So what I do with a pasuk that says clearly Reuven lay with Bila, his concubine, on that melamei shebilbel matzavoi shel aviv malevel kavakosuf kirushachas. What the Gemara says is that what happens is Reuven interferes with the beds of his father, the beds of Bila, and because of this, it is equated to as if he lay with her. Namely, so the Gemara elaborates that what happened was after Rachel died, so rather than Yaakov moving his bed in with Leah, Reuven's mother, instead he moved it into the maidservant, the shivcha of Rachel, namely Bilhah. And Reuven thought that was a slight on his mother's honor. So therefore, he tampered with the bed. So the way Rav Bessel explained it, he says that what happened is in the time of the Bnei Noach, where on that level, interfering at that level was tantamount to getting between the father and wife, and therefore that was prohibited. I saw the Chidor. Chidor gives a beautiful, beautiful answer with an extra knetch at the end. He quotes the Baal HaMapa, and the Baal HaMapa says, Baal HaMapa Shapirish, Shayakov Hayeroitza Lishkov Es Bilo Pilagshay. Yaakov wanted to be together with Bilha. The Niskana Reuven, Reuven was jealous, he's angry because of his dislike on his mother's honor. So he went close to the bedroom chamber, and as a halacha, there is a prohibition for a person to be intimate when there are other people around, people who could hear. The Yaakov Avinu Shoma. Yaakov Avinu heard that someone was making a noise outside, namely Reuven. But Yehoylech Reuven, the Alkin no Shomash. Because of this, Yaakov did not go together with Bilhah, because he heard noises outside. Now, the halacha is that you can't be intimate when there is someone else is around. Therefore, below Yehoylech, therefore the pasuk actually is so mitzuyik. That's why the pasuk says, by you, Bnei Yaakov, Shemotah. There were only 12 Shvatim. Why were there only 12 Shvatim? Because Reuven was involved, and because Reuven interfered. Therefore, rather than being 13 Shvatim, rather than Yaakov being together with Bilhah and having another child, because of this interference of Reuven, because he got in the way, therefore that didn't happen. So therefore, by Yelech Reuven, by Yeholech Mitzayel Bidman, in that time, by Yerot Lilishkov Es Bilhah Pelakshay, Umi Hayerot Lilishkov. Don't say it's Reuven that wanted to lie with Bilhah. No, it was Ovid, his father wanted. That's why the pasuk says Yishma Yisrael. Yisrael, right? Yaakov heard. What did he hear? He heard that Reuven was around, and therefore, because of this, he desisted. And the Chidah finishes that the Baal HaMapa says the Tzochli HaRav HaNitzkar Shekibel Shereuven B'Chalom. Reuven came to this person in a dream. And he thanked him for being found in good exonerating him and saying, hold on, you know, this chait wasn't a chait. So therefore, the understanding of this is the perception that There is a chet, but the chet is based upon that person's perception. Therefore, if we read the Pasha Pshat, Reuben did a chet, no, he didn't do a chet. Yes, on his level, that maybe constitutes a failing, a spiritual failing, because of his high level. But us, for us to have the audacity of saying, well, listen, there's a chet, and or just like he did something, I can do something, chas v'shalom. There is, therefore, this concept of recognizing that there is differences, it sounds, finds expression in the beautiful Chassidus Shlomo Eifel that took place in Rosh Hashanah in Poland. The Rebbe went to do Tashlich, and after Tashlich, one of the Chassidim, right, went headfirst and dived into the freezing river. Finally, some of the other bystanders managed to fish him out, and they said to him, "You know, Mishlubina, what are you doing? He goes, no. So he goes, "I was diving in there." Why? Because Tashlich, a person throws out the Rebbe, the person throws out the Aveira. And the Rebbe's Aveira is Tamei HaMitzvah. Yes, the Rebbe may have thrown out his Aveira into the pond, into the river. I'm very happy. Those type of Aveiras, Halavai HaFmerzi Gizokt. Similarly also, the Mizumah Gaon did the Cheshmer Nefesh, and at the end of the year found that he had 7 minutes of Bittul Torah. Can you imagine a whole year, 7 minutes of Bittul Torah? Now, can we say that off the time ourselves? Halavai, we should go through one Seder, right, without 7 minutes of Bittul Torah. To equate the two is completely ludicrous. The Gemara in Shabbos in Kukkiyo Beis mentions, the famous Gemara, that talks about the concept of Yiridat HaDeres, of recognizing that there has been a spiritual regression in man's sensitivity to Kedusha. Yerushalayim and Avas HaTorah. The Gemara says, "Im Harishonim." Here we're talking about Amoraim. Tanum and Amoraim. Im Harishonim bnei Malachim. If the first ones were the sons of angels, Anu bnei Anoshim. We're just poshtim human beings. Im Harishonim bnei Anoshim. But if the formative ones were considered like human beings, Anu kacham moirim, just like donkeys. And the Gemara finishes. The like Kachamor shall Rabbi Chanina ben Doisa, sure, Pinchas ben Yoir, right? Certain type of animals which even didn't even eat mice, didn't even eat stolen foods. No, Ela Kishah Chamorim, ordinary asses on the street. So that's absolutely, completely gornished at all. There are two types of lenses which a person uses to magnify an object for our eyes. And I think it's very important, the distinction between the two. On the one hand, that you have a microscope. Right? Microscope is what you take for my time, but I don't know. You can examine a cell in detail. And I appreciate the marvels of creation. There's also a telescope, right? A telescope where you're looking at something further down. What is the distinction between the two? The difference is that microscope is you are bigger than the object. You're bigger than the object. You're examining it, you're using it to try and see what lies underneath. The telescope is when you're smaller than the object. You're looking at something that's beyond you. Both of them are beyond you, but you're trying to look outside of you. Something that's beyond. The Maharal makes a distinction. The difference between an Odom and a Behemoth is that a Behemoth's head is faces down. Because all the Behemoth can do is it's concentrated with this world, right? It looks down to this world. That is all it has. Masha Ein Kein, man's head is upright. He can look upwards. And that is the focus, what a yid must strive for. Always must look upwards, and upward focus as well. I can finish off with a story from Yaakov Kamenetsky, which brings this to light. A mechanech, a menal actually in a school, asked him his advice. They had mezuzahs in every single door, and the problem was that most of the kids were pretty short. So they asked if they could bring them shift the mezuzahs further down so that at least when they go past they'll be able to kiss the mezuzah. So Rabbi Yaakov smiled and said, "Yeah, I hear where you were coming from. Obviously you want to increase their sensitivity to that, but I think you're wrong. You need to make sure that it's further up. Why? Don't bring the mezuzah down to the child. Bring the child up to the mezuzah." And that is our lesson when it comes to examining the Ishei HaTanach. There is a gap, there is a distance between the two, but there is still a connection, however tenuous there is, to the Ovos, right? We've got the Ovos, and obviously the Ovos set us forward our examples, and it's something that we must continue along their path as well. But we must use a telescope. We must recognize that the Jew is not under any illusion to imagine that today's society is enlightened, liberal, more moral than previous ones. Quite the contrary. We need to never forget that we are but the pygmies. Yeah? That, nevertheless, we may be pygmies, but we can look up to the giants. And the words of the Talmud of Eliyahu, which are very Mizuyic, a person must always say, Mosa yagia masa lemasa avoisai. When will my deeds reach up the level of deeds of my forefathers? We mustn't hashon drag the avos down to our level, we must raise ourselves up to them. And with this perception, Tal Yisrael will be able to take the legacy of the avos and use it in our own lives. So give us God's help and help them in our own lives. Thank you.